Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, concerns in Mullingar as tents are planned for the former army barracks in the centre of the town to house asylum seekers and refugees. Should the Gardaí be allowed to use facial recognition technology, or will it lead to wrongful arrest, discrimination and surveillance? We debate. Brian O'Connell speaks to former students of Rockwell College in Tipperary about their experiences of violence and abuse in the second level school. What happens when two very different lives collide? Author Jojo Moyes joins us to talk about her new book, Someone Else's Shoes. And we know some medicines have been in short supply in recent months. RTE's Adam Maguire has been finding out why, and he'll tell us if the situation is likely to improve. Our text number is 51551. The email address is todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we're at Today with Claire. First this morning, though, I'm joined in the studio now by the Minister for Finance, Michael McGrath. You're very welcome, Minister.
Morning,
thank you,
Claire,
for coming in. I want to talk to you first about these protests we've seen in Finglas last night, a significant protest in Lismore at the weekend against the planned direct provision centre there. We've had protests in Mallow where local people are blocking the entrance to a construction site destined, we believe, for modular homes. Now, your colleague, the Minister for Integration, Joe O'Brien, was here on Monday and he said that he's more concerned now than he's ever been for the safety of migrants. Do you agree?
It's a very challenging situation. People have a right to protest and we have to vindicate and defend that right. There can be occasions where the line is crossed, where it becomes aggressive, where it becomes threatening. I don't believe that protests should be taking place where people are staying. That is their home, albeit a temporary home. And the people who have come to Ireland are coming here out of desperation. The majority of them fleeing the war in Ukraine, and are coming here for safety and shelter. And I think the Irish people have, in the round, responded with incredible generosity, but it's not surprising. And of course, others are coming here seeking international protection. But we understand the concerns that some people have. There are people with genuine concerns about the strain it places on public services in their community, about the availability of combination. But I think we've been naive not to think that there are some who are exploiting it, and there are some who have a different agenda, who have more hardline views and who are undoubtedly stoking fear, sometimes through misinformation, and that can be very dangerous. So we have to monitor it very closely.
But do you feel there are more and more people who have genuine concerns, who are prepared to come out now and to protest? And if you accept that, are you concerned that social cohesion is under threat in the state?
I think it is a fair observation to say that there are more people with concerns, but that's a function of the growing numbers. You know, we now have about 75,000 people being accommodated by the state, people from Ukraine principally, but also people seeking international protection, and getting more and more accommodation is getting increasingly difficult. Mm-hmm. And so we are having to reach out to new communities that we haven't had to engage with before. The department that Minister O'Gorman runs is under significant pressure. We're trying to share that burden insofar as we can across government and provide every assistance and support that we possibly can, because they have an incredibly difficult job. But I think we just have to bring it back to basics here and remember that these are people who are coming to Ireland for safety and for shelter, many of them fleeing the war in Ukraine, others coming here because they believe that they are being persecuted and they're seeking international protection. And those applications will be processed quickly and a conclusion reached on them.
OK, you think that's critical, do you, that they are processed quickly and that a decision is made?
I think it is. I think that is important, and I think people want to see that. And those who are genuine asylum seekers and have a right to be here, we need to look after them. And those who are not, then there is a system to address that.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think
I
that
think people need to have trust and faith?
Yes. Would that alleviate some of the pressures on the system, both in terms of the protests and the accommodation available, if that system of decision making was speeded up?
Possibly, but I mean, we have to recognise we have international obligations, and you know, we are a democratic state, committed member of the European Union. We signed up to international charters. We have legal obligations, and we have to fulfil those obligations. But we need to do it in the most efficient way that we possibly can. And I would acknowledge that when it comes to community outreach, when it comes to engaging and consulting with communities, we do have to try to do better, but it's not easy because the department and IPAS, the accommodation service, are under constant pressure to find the next available accommodation. And so it's not always possible to have the kind of meaningful consultation that you would like to have. And I would acknowledge that, but it is a function of the numbers and the pressure that the system is under.
It has been reported earlier this week that supports and accommodation for refugees seeking shelter in Ireland could be time limited. Is that under consideration?
So because of the pressure that we're under, all aspects of policy in this area is being reviewed constantly, because we have to make sure that we can provide accommodation to people who are coming here, who are seeking asylum, or people who are coming here from Ukraine who are in need of safety and shelter. And we do have to look after those people and meet their basic needs. But there are many people who are in direct provision, who have gone through the full system, who now have been granted status, legal status, to remain in Ireland, but they haven't left or haven't been able to leave direct provision because they can't find accommodation elsewhere. So there are problems in that regard, but it is a reflection of the overall situation with housing and accommodation in Ireland, which is under great strain. This is adding to the pressure, but we have to continue to do the very best that we can to look after people who are coming here in genuine circumstances.
You mentioned at the start there that people shouldn't protest outside places where people are staying, particularly children and families. Now, does that extend to you supporting this bill proposed by Malcolm Byrne, which would preclude people from protesting outside of people's homes, politicians' homes, for example?
I'm not, like, this isn't really about politicians' homes. It is about the issue of people from Ukraine and those seeking international protection coming here, being put up in hotels or in other centres, looking out the window and finding, you know, a large number of people.
We had a councillor from Ballyfermot here, and he wasn't in his house when protesters went to his home, and his wife and children were inside that house absolutely terrified.
Yeah, I mean, I strongly object to protests outside anyone's home, whether it be somebody seeking asylum, someone coming here from Ukraine, or a politician. I don't believe that protesting at people's home is appropriate or acceptable.
Do we need legislation to prevent it?
Possibly, yeah. And look, we have an open mind on that. It's the last resort, really, to have to legislate for common decency. I think people need to use their cop on and have a bit of respect. And we all have a place of work, and by all means protest at our place of work. But when you protest at somebody's home, then other people, you know, your family members, people who are not involved in any way whatsoever in public policy or policy decisions, are impacted. And I just don't think that's fair.
OK, well, let's move on to these revelations about the state's legal position on reimbursing nursing home charges, which were wrongly levelled on people in the past. And you're sitting at a cabinet table with a number of people who had varying levels of involvement in this issue. Are you confident with what you're hearing from them about what they knew, what they were told, what they signed off on?
Well, I take what everyone has said in good faith, but the Attorney General here is preparing a report. He will give a detailed account to Cabinet next week of the background of this issue, the chronology, the advices that were provided over successive governments to ministers and to cabinets.
Do you want to see those memos that were signed off?
Yeah, of course. I absolutely want to see the paperwork, and we have given a commitment that we will publish what the AG brings forward to government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's quite unprecedented, but I think given the nature of this issue, it is important. But we have to, as a government, uphold the legal rights of our people our citizens.
And that's a fundamental question in all of this, isn't it? It's the government's stance when it comes to dealing with claims for compensation. You know, Ivana Bacic said people are denied their legal rights unless they sue the state. If they do litigate, the cases are defended by the state late in the day, prior to making discovery, certainly prior to going into trial. She said those with the resources and patience to keep going will receive a settlement.
Yeah, I think that the issues that have arisen in recent days, or that have been highlighted in recent days, are different in their nature. Like in the case of the charges that were applied to citizens in private nursing homes who had a medical card. It was never the policy intention of the government or of the Oireachtas or of legislation that the state would pick up that bill. That was never the case.
But if they had no choice, if there was no place for them in a public nursing home.
Of course, since 2009, we have the Nursing Home Support Scheme Act. There's a proper legal basis now, and there is a formal scheme underpinning the payment for care in private homes and indeed in public homes as well. So what we have to do now is go back and look at the period leading up to that and to examine what was the legal position, what was the obligation of the state, but certainly my understanding, based on what I have read so far, is that it was never the intention of government or of the Oireachtas to provide payment in all circumstances for people in a private nursing home when there was no scheme there.
Certainly, with the disability payments issue, and the Taoiseach himself said this, that the government doesn't have a leg to stand on, and yet it was the decision of the state to defend against those claims.
That does appear to be a different issue. And the advice, certainly, that I have read, which has been put into the public domain, was of a different nature, that the state did not have a case. And I just want to be very clear that where we have an obligation, and if that is evident when we go back and look at these issues, and I do think that the disabled person's maintenance allowance does appear to be in a different category, where we have an obligation, we will fulfil that obligation. And if that involves going back and paying people money that should have been paid, then that is what will be done. We have to uphold the law, and we have to respect and uphold the rights of our citizens, and that's what we will do. So we'll do a proper examination of both of these issues. The conclusion may be the same in both, but it may differ as well. But let's get all the facts first, and we will examine them, I think, in a fair-minded and even-handed manner, and that's the commitment.
But you're sitting here as Finance Minister and would appear on the face of this with the nursing homes, with the disability payments, and even with the mother and baby redress scheme, which was discussed in the Dáil last night, that the state puts cost as the top priority above all else, above people's legal rights, above morals, above basic human decency. I mean, can you defend that?
I wouldn't defend that if that was the case, but we will uphold and defend people's legal rights. And, you know, you raised about the disability payment, and it does seem on the surface, and let's do a deep dive and look at all of the documentation, but it does appear from what I have read that there was an explicit recognition that the individuals concerned, who are really vulnerable people, you know, some of them with quite severe and profound disabilities who are in the care of the state, had a right to have their payment continued. And if that is the case, then absolutely those payments should have been made and will now be made, that is the case.
And don't write off the people who paid for nursing home charges in some way, shape or form when they shouldn't have. And I know, I take your point that some people may have opted to go into a private nursing home and that was their choice. But people who were forced to use a private nursing home when they couldn't afford to do so and are then told they're not entitled to a rebate from the state.
Yeah, I'm not writing it off. What I'm saying is that we will have a proper examination of the issue done. On the surface, it would appear that the advice was of different nature, that there was a risk if a case was taken that the state might lose. That is different from saying that the case doesn't have a defence. So the advice does appear to be different. And look, there is a need, of course, and attorneys general and governments will always have regard to the overall situation facing taxpayers and protecting the public finances.
Does that come first?
I'm about to qualify that by saying it does not come ahead of people's rights and people's legal rights, and we will defend and vindicate those rights. So I'm giving a very clear commitment in that regard. Where we have obligations and those are stood up by legal advice from our attorney general, we absolutely should not be walking away from that or seeking to hide that. We have to confront that and make those payments. And I cannot be clearer than that.
All right, let's talk about what's going to happen with the cost of living packages that the government has put in place. Because we know that you're discussing the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan, used the term weaning us off those measures that were introduced last year. So the energy grant, let's take that first. We're due another one in March, €200.
Correct, yeah.
Do you think that that should be the last one?
So can I just make a background point, first of all, which is that, look, thankfully, we're in a position where we can make interventions. So we had an €11 billion budget, €4 billion of once-off exceptional measures, which were a real help to people between September and the Christmas period. And then we staggered the electricity credits, for example, one in January, another one in March. The income tax measures have just kicked in, the reduction in childcare costs, the permanent improvements to social welfare, the abolition of hospital inpatient charges, the rent tax credit, just to name a flavour of the measures.
Is that it though?
So then we have the ability as a government, because the public finances are in a good place, the Irish economy is in good health, to step in and step out as appropriate. It is a judgment call as to when you step in and when you step out. You do have to retain that flexibility, that when you bring in temporary measures, they are by their nature temporary, and you have to carry out an assessment as to when is the appropriate time to withdraw them or to taper them off. So that is the work that is ongoing at the moment.
But
I'm very conscious that in the months ahead, we may well have to make further interventions. And as Minister for Finance, I have to ensure that we have the resources available to the state to do that again.
Mm-hmm. So over the summer, maybe when it's a bit warmer, you could pull back on the €200. Is that what you're thinking? And then reintroduce it in the winter?
Look, broadly speaking, at the level of principle, you know, you respond to when the need is most acute. But if it is the case that when we make interventions and we do temporary reductions in tax or we do temporary payments, that we can never step away from them, then we won't be able to make those kind of interventions in the future. So that's just an important point of principle to make. We do have to be flexible and agile in our response. And we have the resources to do so, which is a really positive thing. So what we're doing now is we're assessing all of the measures that are due to end.
What's your sense on the need then at the moment? When it comes to the energy subsidy.
My sense is that a lot of people are under real pressure. And we know that very big bills have landed in the month of January. I've seen many of them myself. People have sent me examples of their bills. You know, bills of €1,000 between gas and electricity are not uncommon in the month
That's
of January.
Now, and
That's now.
You probably feel you've dealt with that
well,
now.
Well, we
with
applied
the
credit, which was a help. It didn't go all the way for many people, for sure. And we have another credit committed in the month of March. Mm-hmm. So that's funded, that's provided for. That will happen. But we do have other measures. A lot of people probably don't even realise we cut the VAT on their electricity and their gas bill to 9%. That's the maximum we could cut it by. That expires at the end of February. We have an immediate decision to make in the next week or two on that question. And I'm conscious bills are really high and the March bills are going to be high because
so it might be the VAT
they deal with consumption.
Or the grant.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just giving an example of the measures we have to decide upon. We also cut excise on petrol and diesel. So we cut in total between the various measures excise and petrol by 23 cents.
And when are you going to tell us what you're doing about all of that? Because that could be an overnight change.
Well, whatever change will ultimately happen will happen quickly, but we will be announcing it in advance and allowing a lead in time. So I would expect within the next 2 weeks we'll come to a final view and make a public statement as to what our intentions are, because any changes will require financial resolutions to be brought into the Dáil. Subsequently, a finance bill will have to be brought in. So we have the excise issues, we have the VAT on the household bills, we have a temporary business energy support scheme. The revenue will publish updated numbers this morning. About 21,000 businesses have now registered. About €27 million of claims have been approved. So the numbers are increasing there. But I need to look at the future of that scheme. Are we going to continue it? And if so, does it need to be amended? Do the gateway, the entry criteria need to change? Does the level of support that we provide need to change? So there are a whole range of issues that we
change
have to
change in which direction?
Around.
Is it too hard to access
well, I think
it
it's
or
fair
too
to
easy?
Say that the uptake is lower than we would have expected.
Because the threshold is too high?
For, I think, different reasons. I think one of the reasons is that the businesses had experienced increases in their energy bills prior to September of 2021. So the reference period has proven difficult for a lot of people to prove that they have a 50% increase in their per unit cost because they already had absorbed increases prior to the reference period. So that kind of detail is what we're looking through. I'll be pulling it all together, discussing it with colleagues, making a presentation and a recommendation to the party leaders, which we'll have to have regard to where we are in our public finances. We'll be publishing the Exchequer returns for the month of January later on today. That will show that we are performing in line with what we expected at budget time, which is good news in terms of the public finances and the overall health of the economy.
So that
feeds into the mix that we have to consider. But recognising that people are still under pressure, I absolutely accept that.
In your predecessor, Pascal Donoghue, in his final budget speech, he said that the department is examining this 30% tax rate, which was suggested by Leo Varadkar as something that should be examined. Are you continuing that work?
That work is continuing. And I'm conscious that we have a programme for government commitment in relation to income tax, which is to increase the band, so the entry point at a higher rate.
Yeah, but the 30% now is a Fine Gael idea.
That's a different,
and what do you think of it?
That's a different proposal. It has some merit, but it also has considerable cost. And it depends, of course, on the breadth of that band. If you introduce a new 30% band, you know, what level of income does it cover? Does it cover €2,000, €5,000? And all of that then will determine the amount of cost involved. So when I came into my current position, I asked the officials to continue that work and to conclude that work. And I'll be engaging with them now, I anticipate very shortly, on that question.
Is it a priority for you, though? Someone else's idea, another party's idea?
Because
I'm sure you have your own, right?
If we were to do it, then the revenue would need to know quite early on. But when we had these discussions last year in advance of the budget, I made the point that, you know, it wasn't the time to be writing budget 2024. Those decisions will be made in the autumn of this year. And that's when we'll be making the final decisions. But because the operational aspect of a third rate of income tax does require a significant lead-in time, the revenue will need a heads up as such, a steer quite shortly as to whether or not we're going to go down that road. So I'll conclude my own assessment of it, and I will of course discuss that with the party leaders.
Okay, on mortgage interest, people have been hit with so many increases now, and we're expecting another one today, aren't we, from the ECB. So that's increases of 2.5 percentage points by the end of March. It'll be up by another 1%, we expect. Have you any plans to introduce mortgage interest relief to help people out?
We don't have any such plans at this time. We will certainly keep all of this under review. I'm conscious that, you know, we are coming off the back of 10, 11 years of historic low interest rates, and the changes since July have been rapid and do represent a big shock to the household finances of, you know, hundreds of thousands of homes all over Ireland. I acknowledge that point. Many people are locked into fixed rates, and so they're not impacted immediately. But tracker customers are impacted as soon as an announcement is made by the ECB. And while we haven't seen changes in variable rates by banks, I think we will see such changes shortly. And I also have raised concerns about the situation facing those whose mortgages are with non-bank lenders and service providers, because they have a different funding mix.
Some of them are paying up to 7%.
They're paying about 7%, yeah. They don't have deposits, and so their funding, as in the lenders are funding their operations through the interbank market, so they're more directly exposed to ECB changes, and the rate that they have been charging has come from a higher rate of perhaps 4-4.5%, and then they've added the full 2.5%.
But you're not going to do anything. That's your answer.
No, I'm engaging with the central bank directly on this issue. We have written to them as a department, and I have discussed it directly with the governor of the central bank. They are
saying what? Saying, do we need to do something?
Well, I'm asking them their views and whether or not they need any additional powers, for example, recognising they are independent, they are the regulator. They have given me an update on the work that they are doing with all of these loan owners in relation to the Consumer Protection Code, reaffirming the fact that under the CCMA, the Code of Conduct and Mortgage Arrears, all of these lenders have to engage proactively with their borrowers. They have to deal with cases sympathetically.
So it sounds like you're expecting an increase in mortgage arrears because of increasing interest rates.
I think we'd be foolish to think that it's not going to happen.
So you're asking the central bank, do you need more powers to ensure that there is enough forbearance for people who cannot pay their
mortgage? There needs to be forbearance, because people paying, you know, 7% and possibly above inevitably will come under real pressure. And the level of mortgage arrears in Ireland has fallen consistently since 2010. It's now at about 4.3% of mortgages are in arrears of 90 days or more. That's the lowest in over a decade, which is good news. But of course, that coincided with a period of low interest rates.
Yeah.
So interest rates are changing. And I think we've been naive to think that people are not going to come under pressure to pay their mortgages. They are under pressure.
Yeah, because we have those two big players who've left the market. And one of the reasons that has been put forward is that you can't repossess a house here when people default on their mortgage repayments.
You can repossess, but it's difficult. And, you know, we have a process in place there. We as a country have placed a priority on protecting the family home. I think that's a good thing. It does have a consequence, but there are other reasons too. The amount of capital that Irish banks have to hold, for example, is an issue that has been raised consistently. But I just want to say I'm acutely conscious of the pressure that rising interest rates places on mortgage holders. Some of them are insulated. We have gone from a situation in Ireland where we were among the most expensive in Europe to now being the third lowest in the Eurozone. So, and that is because the Irish banks generally fund their mortgages from their deposits.
Okay.
Not from the interbank market. So that's a major change. You've had many a discussion in this show about how high mortgage rates generally in Ireland have been. We're now the third lowest in the Eurozone. We're below the Euro area average. There's no guarantee that that will last. So it's a mixed picture. A lot of people fixed. About 93% of all new mortgages now are at fixed rates. Others are on variable and tracker and are directly exposed to ECB rates. And obviously we have concerns for many of those, but particularly for those whose loans are with non-bank lenders who are regulated. I brought in legislation in opposition that led to them being fully regulated. But we do need the central bank to be proactive in terms of managing the risk that is there now for many of those people.
Minister, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you,
Claire. Minister for Finance, Michael McGrath. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.